Well, it's only Thursday again, the day everyone looks forward to, and we have another packed, albeit cobbled together show this week, and today's date is July the 29th. This is the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name is Thomas Williams. Enjoy the triggering. Hi all, and welcome to another week of THI. So what do we have this week? Well, we'll see. I've been away for most of this week and had a lovely trip with lovely people up in Utah and people coming from other states also. And yet again, it was refreshing to see how all members got on so well with each other. And this books the trend of how things work outside of our group. Racked with infighting, and yet here is a group of people, some who have never met at all, getting along, including two followers of the Life Force group. Unlike others, we welcome all. And this reinforces that the Village Project will be a success, as like-minded people all come and join together in a peaceful and cooperative way that sadly is not too evident too much outside of our own circle. Now, I've been informed that two other potential villages being created around the country, and we'll have more details at a later date on that. But the clowns and the alt-media groups still persist with trying to interfere or denigrate our group. But what it shows is that it's working for us, but it's not working too well for them, as we all came together stronger. Let them waste their energy and focus on us. We will push on with positive vibes and engagements whilst they wallow in their negative and failing campaigns. And in case people are wondering why their posts are not going up on Facebook, the admins decided to not post anything until Facebook clears their childlike ban on August the 16th, and the best option is to join MeWe. Now, those who attended this week's gathering got to see things other people don't normally get to see, and all left with the feelings nothing will be the same anymore. And when you can finally gain the ability to see things you don't or can't normally see, it changes you forever. What was illusion and hearsay became reality and truth for them. And those who met me in Utah got a taste of my world. And that happens on an almost daily basis. That is my life. That is my normal. But to them, it was magical. And that will live long in their memories. But this is a glorious time for us all who have been in the alt media for a long time. Remember when people were saying, nothing is happening? Now there are several major talking points are happening on a daily basis, and some are struggling to keep up. And why is it glorious? Because we have forced the mainstream media and social media giants into a war of words with us, and they have validated us with their sheer will to try and stem the tide of the narrative that is running away from them. Who would have thought a few years ago they would resort to petty attempts at banning, silencing and blocking us? And whilst that may frustrate some people, in overview, it is a massive victory for we the people and the truth. Far from silencing now, it is waking more and more people up from their slumber, and no longer are so many of the masses tolerating the lies. The money, energy and effort they use against us now clearly states we are a force to be reckoned with, and no longer can they just describe us as conspiracy theorists, nut jobs, or anti-this or anti-that, as it clearly no longer works for them. The truth train has left the station, and the mainstream media and their agency-based clowns can no longer stop it. Truth has and will prevail. Right, let's get into some news pieces that's been going on. And the first thing is the BBC. Yes, our friends over there. And their pathetic attempts to discredit facts this week that was provided by various official sources. And it's a further desperate attempt to stem the tide of information against them and all other Hebrew Anunnaki-led media. You know, they decided to do a whole piece and they selected four categories to deflect from, which is a change from the one category as now the evidence begins to mount up. And the first was a claim in the UK that there was a sharp increase in cremations last year based on a report from an official Freedom of Information Act. And the council responsible reported the figures were wrong and blamed a glitch in their reporting process. Well, why put it out to begin with? Now, the total cremations went up 75,000 last year and was the highest by far of cremations in the last 20 years. So the BBC were wrong. So they went on to a second attempt. Hospital vaccine admission increase, after their own health minister said 60% of admissions were double jabbers, which he then changed his mind due to pressure and said 60% was for unvaxxed. And yet, even if his retraction were true, why is the 40% of people who are vaxxed going into hospital if the vaccine worked? Neither figure's good. So the BBC failed again. The third attempt was a report from the American Senator Marjorie Greene. And in a report released earlier this year by the World Obesity Federation, data on 2.5 million COVID-19 deaths was drawn from more than 160 countries. And 2.2 million of these deaths occurred in countries where at least 50% of the population was deemed overweight. And so the BBC went to great lengths to expand the category and age factor, none of which would satisfy a critical thinker. But part four was a classic. Tens of thousands of unreported deaths was, quote, misleading, they said. And based on VAERS fares, which stated their figures are misleading. So now we have the City Council in the UK deciding that their figures are wrong, and now the VAERS reporting system are saying that their figures are wrong. Funny it wasn't wrong when they were adding up the COVID cases. But VAERS are an official checker of facts and records the data. But now it doesn't suit, you see. And then they said, we spoke to the CDC. Well, that's useful, isn't it? Who then told us the methodology used to search for data was wrong. Ooh. And the correct figure of reported deaths amongst people who received the vaccine from December 2020 through July 2021 is 6,207. Why has 6,000 died? if the vaccine works. The CDC has a fact checker, BBC. The CDC are a vaccine patenting and producing non-governmental source. Oh my. Keep trying, BBC. Your attempts at deflecting the truth becomes more embarrassing by the day, and you will suffer the same fate as CNN and others. Governor Clown Cuomo raked in amounted to 10% of the $2.3 million that Cuomo raised during the past 6 months, according to the Board of Election Records. Now, although New York City limits candidates from receiving more than $400 each from anyone doing business with City Hall, there's no such restrictions on state candidates. Will I never? Now, John Kahaney, head of the Good Government Group Reinvent Albany, said the money given to Cuomo looks like pay to play, which is exactly what it is. And he said it's crazy that this is even allowed. And they've been pushing for a ban on state vendors contributing to campaigns. Now, the non-profit Somas Network is made up of around 2,500 doctors who primarily treat patients whose bills are paid by the state's $75 billion Medicaid program, which is amongst the nation's costliest and most generous in terms of benefits. No surprise, all about the money there. But some of the leader of Somas Network perhaps reveals some clues. Mr. Paredes, he received the degree of Knight, with a K, as the recipient of the 2018 Order of Merit Gabriela Mistral Award. In 2017, he received a Doctor of Liberal Arts degree from the Catholic University of America. Not content with that, to complete the picture, Mr. Paredes was created Knight Grand Cross of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem in 2012. There's far too many of these politicians are making decisions not based on science or facts, but how much money they were paid to read a prepared statement and script. And unless the public step up and make these people accountable, this practice will continue. This is quite a pleasing story in many ways. And this echoes the youth around the world no longer tolerating the old ways. But efforts by Israel and its lobby to equate criticism of Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people with anti-Jewish bigotry are in overdrive at the moment. But a new poll indicates that this campaign has failed, even with the vast majority of Jewish American voters. And a survey was commissioned by the Jewish Electorate Institute, which is a group led by supporters of the Democratic Party, and contains several eye-catching findings. A quarter of Jewish American voters agree that Israel is an apartheid state. A quarter. And that number shoots up to 38% amongst those under aged 40. 32% of Jewish voters overall agree that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians, a figure that rises to an astonishing 33% amongst the younger group. Moreover, Israel's treatment of Palestinians is similar to racism in the US, and according to 34% of Jewish voters surveyed, that figure exceeds 2 in 5 amongst those under 40. Now, these findings are likely to dismay lobby group leaders who have long fretted about the erosion of support for Israel amongst Jewish Americans, particularly the younger ones. And what is also striking is that even Jews who disagreed that Israel commits apartheid and genocide often do not consider such statements to be anti-Semitic. The program is breaking down. And for example, 62% of those surveyed about Palestinians, so Israelis. 61% surveyed still support the moribund two-state solution. But a sizable minority, 20%, favours a democratic one-state solution with equality for everyone living between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. Now just 19% favour formal Israeli annexation of the occupied West Bank without giving the Palestinians equal rights and effectively the situation that exists now in all but name. So only 19% of American Jews approve of the annexation of Palestinian land. Now when it comes to US aid to Israel, 71% overall consider it important, but 58% agree that the US should restrict such aid from being used by Israel to build settlements in the occupied West Bank. 58%. Meanwhile, 62% favour the US restarting the aid to Palestinians that was cut by the Trump administration. Now, this poll did not ask respondents about the Palestinian-led boycott, divestment and sanctions movement, but a poll of Jewish Americans by the Pew Research Center published in May did. And it found that 34% of Jewish Americans strongly oppose the BDS movement. Just 34%. Which is consistent with other findings most hostile to BDS, who are tended to be older. Why? Because they're more programmed. They're also said to be more Republican and also more religious. Now this article pleased me no end, and this show has campaigned on behalf of the Jewish people to not be used and abused for political agendas that only benefit the Jewish Elites. And it's refreshing to see, despite the media and lobbyist bombardment that the Jewish people are now seeing through their pro-pagan dar and forming their own common sense opinions. To the Jewish Elites and your off-world programs, TikTok. With many of the world's youth no longer accepting religion, within two generations now, the religious and not safe been provided that, but child level people remained on in their adult years, as you're supposed to see through the myriad of illusions that religion brings. In 40 years time, it will be no more, and that will be a momentous occasion for this planet and its remaining inhabitants. In the next 20 years, the older Elites will die off also, and their younger generations are not following the preset script of control and hegemony either. As all that goes down, our task is to replace it with something better. Not copy the failed past, but build a new way for and by the people in our own image at last. Not in the Hebrew Anunnaki image. Australian politicians have condemned protests against coronavirus restrictions amid a rising cases. Yes, because you've jabbed everyone and they've all got sick. And thousands marched through Sydney on Saturday to demand an end to lockdown measures, with smaller demonstrations taking place in Melbourne and Brisbane. And at least 57 people involved, it's always 57, it's the Heinz variety, for those of you who remember a past show, have been charged, while more than 500 have been fined. Now on Sunday, New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian said that the protesters should be ashamed. Just how, but one has to ask, if, how does an Armenian rise to power in this country? Does that make any sense? Is Australia saying there is no viable native Australian to take that role? Or is it a program? And she went on. Millions and millions of people across our state are doing the right thing. And it just broke my heart that people had such a disregard for their fellow citizens. No, the reality is, millions of people are acting like bots following the misinformed or corrupt Gladys. And who is she to judge the Australian people? Now, the state recorded 141 new infections on Sunday, the second highest daily increase of the year. And there are fears of a further rise in cases following Saturday's protest. You can take that to the bookies and bet on it. They've got to cover up the fact that people are dying or are being harmed in record numbers, as we will find out. Now, authorities in New South Wales are expected to extend the current lockdown, which is set to end on July 30th. Yet again, the childlike behaviour continues. Just like a child that doesn't get its own way, let's start calling people names. You know, it's utterly pathetic behaviour. And those people who label their citizens in that manner should be fired on the spot. But fears of more cases because people protested is a desperate retort that is not based in facts. But if only they had the same fears about the vaccines, which is proven to be killing and harming their own people. Of course, we've had people flying into space, Richie Richards recently. But in a move that pours cold water on the dreams of a few billionaire space explorers, the US has tightened its definition of the word astronaut. And the new Federal Aviation Administration rules say astronaut hopefuls must be part of the flight crew and make contributions to flight safety. Really? And that means Jeff Bezos, or Buzz Off, and Richard Branson, of the neighbouring Epstein Island, may not be yet classed as astronauts in the eye of the US government. Now, these are the first changes since the FAA WINGS program began in 2004, and the commercial astronaut WINGS program updates were announced on Tuesday, the same day as Mr. Bezos flew aboard Blue Origin rocket to the edge of space. Now, to qualify as commercial astronauts, spacegoers must travel 50 miles above the Earth's surface, which both Mr. Bezos and Branson accomplished. But altitude aside, the agency says would-be astronauts must have also demonstrated activities during flight that were essential to public safety or contributed to human space flight safety. And what exactly counts as such is determined only by FAA officials. Again, it's childlike, isn't it? Nothing is official unless the weak and petty authorities declare it so. But who cares? You know, this obsession of the authorities to record everything and declare anything official if they approve it is again childlike behaviours. It boggles the mind. But the point is, if you develop the self you can travel up in space and look back on the Earth without tin cans and millions of gallons of rocket fuel. Just saying. White House lie press secretary Jen Psaki on Thursday said the White House will not publicize how many vaccinated staffers have tested positive for COVID-19. And she said, no, I don't think that you can expect that we will be providing numbers of breakthrough cases, she said in response to the number of COVID-19 cases amongst vaccinated people on the White House campus. And Psaki said there are roughly 2,000 people who work on the White House campus, so breakthrough cases are inevitable, statistically speaking, she said. And she said, we're in a very different place than we were several months ago, emphasizing the vast majority of vaccinated people who get COVID-19 will be asymptomatic, and have mild symptoms. Now, on Tuesday, Psaki confirmed there had previously been multiple breakthrough cases in the White House after it was reported that a White House official and an aide to the non-speaker of the House, Pelosi, both fully vaccinated, tested positive for COVID-19. But on Wednesday, the White House press secretary said that the administration would disclose when officials who've attested positive come in close contact with the president or the vice president, Kamala Harris. It's unreal. And the American people tolerate this utter crap. It's funny how they couldn't wait to expose the virus figures. And, look how dangerous it is. Now, when a real danger arises of the increase in numbers of deaths and injuries from the vaccines and the increase of people getting COVID despite being vaccinated, out comes the blocking and the denial of facts. Truth never fears investigation, Ms. Psaki, and you have just proven you are covering something up. There's a large controversy going on surrounding anti-Israel tweets of a teaching assistant at the maths non-expert Johns Hopkins University. And it appears it won't go away. Why? Because it's a program, you see. As Jewish rights groups press the university to reveal the actions they have taken against a young graduate student who posted them. Now, in a series of tweets, copies of some which were provided in the form of screenshots, Rasha Anyana, a PhD candidate and teaching assistant in the university's chemistry department, tweeted out a question posted as a survey and followed it up with other posts. Anyana tweeted, "Ethical dilemma, if you have to grade a Zionist student's exam, do you still give them all their points, even though their support for ethnic cleansing?" And she posted two possible answers. Yes, be a good tar, and free Palestine, fail them. Now, according to the post, there were 18 replies that day, 77% of which favoured the failing students. And she posted the response to the poll results that supported failing the students by saying, like, I agree, but too many of you want me to get fired. Now, Anyana made her anti-Israel and pro-Palestinian views clear in a series of tweets, posting which also indicated the presence of racial and graduate-undergraduate tension in her classroom. And she said, we had an undergrad in the laboratory who had been on Birthright to Israel and one of the street signs to Tel Aviv on her laptop. It stabbed me every time she opened it, she said. Really? She needs to get a life. And she said, if I had been paired to one of them or one of those conceited white boys, I would have lost it. Nice try there to merge the Jewish in with the whites. Subtle but significant. And that was the line that suggests that this whole episode is a staged racial event. But it's worth pointing out that yet again, the distraction, shame and pity party is rolled out, stating any group or person is wrong, is not and never was racist or anti-Semitic. Yet these people connected to Israel always turn valid criticism into a witch hunt and then stifle the whole conversation, just like Ms. Psaki in the previous piece. And the point is, people are entitled to their opinion without the overarching political correctness reach, labelling people unfairly due to their own opinions. You know, nobody has to agree with anyone's opinions, including mine. But you then don't twist that opinion into something that it's clearly not. Spanish police, we're going there next, have arrested a 22-year-old UK citizen in connection with the hacking of 130 high-profile Twitter accounts, including Elon Musk, Barack Obama, and Kanye West. Now, the hacked accounts tweeted followers, encouraging them to join a Bitcoin scam in July last year. Bitcoin is a scam. Full stop. And also charged with hacking TikTok and Snapchat. And Joseph O'Connor faces charges including 3 counts of conspiracy to intentionally access a computer without authorization and obtaining information from a protected computer. Now, the San Francisco division of the FBI has been investigating the case, helped by the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Cyber Crimes Unit and the United States Secret Service. Now, previously, authorities had charged 3 men in relation to the breach, a 19-year-old from Bognor Regis in the UK, another teenager, and a 22-year-old from Florida. And they said hackers took control of public figures' accounts and sent a series of tweets asking followers to transfer cryptocurrency to a specific Bitcoin wallet to receive double the money in return. Unreal. But it's funny how there have been several high profile hacks of the public's data, firstly to all the credit card companies and banks. And yet, no one gets found. Unless they are hacks of leading figures, and names and arrests suddenly unfold. I wonder how that curious anomaly works out. Pegasus. A bit more on them. And the allegations that spy software known as Pegasus may have been used to carry out surveillance on journalists, activists, and even perhaps political leaders highlights that surveillance is now for sale. And the company behind the tool, NSO Group, has denied the allegations and says its customers are carefully assessed. Yeah, right. But this is another sign that high-end spy techniques, which used to be the exclusive preserve of a few states, are now spreading more widely and challenging the way we think about privacy and security in an online world. Now, in the not-too-distant past, if a security service wanted to find out what you were up to, it took a fair degree of effort to do so. They might get a warrant to wiretap your phone or plant a bug in your house or send a surveillance team to follow you. And finding out who your contacts were and how you lived your life would take patience and time. Yeah, I know that all too well. bunch of idiots. But now, almost everything they might want to know, what you say, where you've been, who you meet, even what interests you, is all contained in a device that we carry all the time. Your phone. Which can be accessed remotely without anyone even touching it, and you never knowing it's been turned from your friendly digital assistant into someone else's spy. Like a cat. Are cats friendly? Moving on. And this, what this is warning you of, is all courtesy of the CIA stooge, British establishment and NATO pawn, Robert David Steele. He stated that people will become the intelligence via their phones, and we have. Open source was created by his company, OSS. Now, the ability to remotely access that phone was once considered something only a few states could do, but high-end espionage and surveillance powers are now in the hands of many other countries and even individuals and small groups. And the former intelligence contractor Edward Snowden revealed the power of US and UK intelligence agencies to tap into global communications back in 2013. And those agencies always maintained that their capabilities were subject to the authorizations and oversight of a democratic country. No. What the agencies do, that's why they have the National Security Act, you see. What the agencies do, they have no oversight on it. Because the clearance level to access the information is not available to politicians. And so they roll out the National Security Act. But back in the time, those authorizations were fairly weak, but have since been strengthened. And his revelations, Snowden, however, prompted other nations to consider what was possible, and many became eager for the same kinds of capabilities, and a select group of companies, most of which have kept a low profile, most of which are in Israel, have increasingly sought to sell it to them. Now, Israel has always been a first-tier cyber power with top-end surveillance capabilities, and its company like NSO Group, often formed by veterans of the intelligence world, hello Mossad, have been among those to commercialize the techniques. Now, the NSO Group say they only sell their spyware for use against serious criminals and terrorists. But the problem is, how you define those categories, is it not? Did the government define them, or did they define themselves? Now, the spread of encryption has increased the drive for governments to get inside people's devices. But guess who devised encryption? The CIA and the NSA, and they have backdoors in all encryption codes. And it says when phone calls were the main means of communication, a telecoms company could be ordered to wiretap the conversation, which once meant literally attaching wires to the line. But now the conversations are often encrypted, meaning you need to get to the device itself to see what was said. And devices also carry out a much richer treasure trove of data, which is why they created them. And states, they say, sometimes come up with clever ways of doing this. And a recent example was a joint US-Australian operation, Pine Gap, in which criminal gangs were given phones they thought were super secure, but were really operated by law enforcement. but the issues are wider than this kind of phone. Spyware and other high-end intelligence capabilities are also spreading fast. And even the tools to disrupt a business online are now easy accessible. Just ruined people's business. But the reality is, Steele and his clown buddies need to be brought to task over this. And the alt media should boycott all of Steele's and his bloodline family sidekick with a fake name, Sasha Stone. He created this. And all agency people working on this are essentially digital voyeuristic perverts. And they'll tell you that they're spying on certain people. Yet what is to stop them prying on your children in a perverted way? Given the highest volume of child porn is on the servers connected to the agencies and the DOD, where do you think that data came from? Oops. His exploits were fictionalized in a Hollywood movie, and now the true story of a one-time teenager FBI informant has a new twist. Richard Wurst Jr. has filed a $100 million lawsuit against former FBI agents and prosecutors alleging child abuse in connection with his time as an informant. Now, Wersch, now 52, spent three decades behind bars after a drug conviction. But he was recruited by the FBI at age 14. Said to be the youngest FBI informant in history. And he said, "I want this chapter in my life closed." Surrounded by family at a press conference on Tuesday on the one-year anniversary of his release. Known as White Boy Rick, Wersch's brief stint as an informant and his ultimate conviction inspired the 2018 movie of the same name with Matthew McConaughey, or McConaughey, cast as his fictional father. Now, Wersch said that the moniker was not his nickname, but made up by the media around the time of his arrest, White Boy Rick. But former Detroit police officers, retired FBI agents, former federal prosecutors, and the city of Detroit are all named in the lawsuit. Now, a spokesman for the Detroit office of the FBI declined to comment on the suit because it's ongoing. But the 10-page lawsuit, Wersch alleged he was initially contacted by federal agents after his father reached out to the FBI saying his daughter was dating a known drug dealer. And he recalled meeting regularly with FBI agents and Detroit police officers to provide information on Detroit's drug gangs. And he said, "Had I not been an informant for the task force, I would never have gotten involved with drug gangs or criminality of any sort." And he worse said he was coerced into continuing the work despite what he described as an attempted assassination by local criminals once his link to law enforcement was suspected. But after 2 years working with law enforcement, Wersch was drawn to the other side, and he told the Guardian in 2015 he was blinded by money, women and material possessions, and he was convicted in Michigan at the age of 17 for possession of cocaine. 30 years for that, really? And his role as an informant was not admissible in court, and he received a life sentence. And he said, I was misguided. I went down a path that I never thought would affect the rest of my life. But this is more common than people think. Agency goons work in prisons, schools and colleges to co-opt people into doing their dirty work, sometimes by direct bribes, and others they have dirt on them and use against people. There are quite a number of lead alt-media personalities who were trapped into doing their bidding on the internet, and many of them fell to avoid prosecution or persecution of them and their families. You ever wonder why Robert David Steele turns up at so many alt-media channels? Perhaps there's a reason why. Where are we next? Let's leave that one out. This is a report by Executive Intelligence Review News Service, and it's called Systematic Breakdown Systemic Solution. Now, I have no idea who these people are, but it may give us some pointers as to what's going on and playing out around the world. And it says the planet is deep into a systemic breakdown crisis, which is spinning off distinct, profound explosions on every continent, Asia, Europe, Africa, and the Caribbean. And they may appear to have different immediate triggers, but the backdrop to each and all is the collapse of the world's economic and financial system, and the related COVID pandemic, which continues to rage like the mask of the Red Death. That it is, the mask of the Red Death. What an interesting choice of words, the Red Death. Because red is the colour of communism and also blood. And after the Rus were taken over by the Red Shield, as in Rothschild, their Zionism, not communism, spread like a plague over many countries. They said in each circumstance, as globally, these crises are fraught with danger and with opportunity. In Afghanistan, the pullout of American and NATO troops after a 20-year unmitigated failure now threatens to make that country the new cockpit for British terrorism, drug running and geopolitical destabilization, targeting Russia and China in particular. A common theme there, like the East and West Indies tea companies, both ran by the Jewish Rothschild Mafia. They sent the Dutch in to create havoc, death and acquire lands and resources, and then the money country, which is on British soil but not connected to Britain, takes over and harvests the region. India, Australia, New Zealand, the Caribbean and South Africa, just to name but a few. And ultimately America as well. Given despite claims to the contrary by the trustee, the Crown out of the City of London still rules over America. But they always send the British in. It's got nothing to do with British people or the government for that matter, and everything to do with the City of London. And they said there's also a meeting underway in Tajikistan of the foreign ministers of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is discussing the concrete proposals of China and Russia, among others, for stabilising that situation based on the pursuit of common development, such as through Belt and Road projects and open and inclusive regional cooperation to create conditions for a common security against terrorism, separatism and extremism. And they asked, will the SCO member India, which has not yet joined the Belt and Road Project, now act on the understanding that it is fundamental in the interest of India that Afghanistan be stabilised by all of its neighbours working together? Now, the Belt Road is the more modern version of the Silk Road, all of which was ran by Jewish money men. It's not changed. Terrorism, separatism and extremism were all created by the agencies for unrest in the region. So at a later date, the robber barons come in and harvest everything, like a latter-day Marduk plan. Now, in South Africa, they said the politically motivated jailing of former President Jacob Zuma has triggered a wave of protests and now violent riots and looting, which has left a death toll of 72 people as of Wednesday night. And half of South Africa's 60 million people live in poverty, 43% are unemployed, and the pandemic is ripping a path of destruction across the country and all of Africa, where vaccination levels are close to zero in most countries. That's because their presidents know better is why. Now, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has just restated the obvious. They said, we need at least 11 billion doses to vaccinate 70% of the world and end this pandemic. Except the World Health Organization and CDC said it won't. It's funny that. And we would need further vaccines to update the operating system, not cure the virus. But everyone everywhere must have access to COVID-19 vaccines, tests, treatments and support, they said. In the Caribbean, Haitian President Jovenel Moïse was assassinated on July the 7th in a black op carried out by a collection of mercenaries and hitmen, many of whom were former informants and stringers for the DEA, the FBI and other US agencies. And 2 days later, the de facto new president of Haiti called for the US to send troops into that country where African levels of poverty, hunger and disease have existed for decades. Now, apart from the obvious Clinton and democratic issues in Haiti, there is possibly another reason for invading, not rescuing there, as not a single vaccine has yet been administered in Haiti. Not one. But just 2 days after that, street demonstrations were conjured up in nearby Cuba, with funds and political support from the US State Department, NED and allied NGOs, intended to launch a full-scale destabilization and regime change operation against Cuba. Oh my, it's 1962 again. Which for 60 years has endured sanctions and an embargo, which has gravely worsened the economic and pandemic crisis in that country. And they say the answer for the broader Caribbean basin, including Mexico and Central America, is for the United States to cooperate economically with China to bring the Belt and Road into that region and revive large-scale American exports of capital goods in the process. The answer for Africa is, again, U.S. cooperation. Since when have the U.S. ever cooperated with any country? Like, never. And the China's Belt and Road activity in that continent of Africa to construct everything required for a modern health system and associated infrastructure to be built in every nation. And the answer for Afghanistan lies in the same direction. the solution for the United States will be found by reviving a scientifically driven industrial economy whose purpose is to bring advanced development to every corner of the planet and the solar system. And they said, is the systemic crisis bringing us to that branching point in history? The reason I put that in is that sounds like a restoration plan for the elites to me. And one does have to ponder on that, as this is a global improvement, not based on improving people's lives, but to enrich certain bloodline families all over again. Right, we're on to some COVID BS now. As the mask man today, Biden, tries to bribe people with $100 to take their vaccine. But does anyone ask, if it's so safe and available, why would you have to bribe people to take it? Sorry, I was afflicted with some common sense there. I do apologise. But did you know that the AstraZeneca Technojab box has a date stamped on it for production of July the 15th, 2018? And so it was a year before the discovery of the global pandemic. Oops. The JCVI said in a statement issued on July 19th that children aged 12 to 15 with severe neurodisabilities, Down syndrome, immunosuppression and multiple or severe learning disabilities should be offered the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. I guess it's Nazi time again. Not German, but National Zionist programs. Now, a report came in this week that the Supreme Court in America has cancelled universal vaccination in the United States, and I was unable to follow up on it. But this is the report that was given, and it stated that Bill Gates and the US Chief Infectious Disease himself, Dr. I Don't Give a Fauci, and Big Pharma have lost a lawsuit in the US Supreme Court, failing to prove that all of their vaccines over the past 32 years have been safe for the health of citizens. Now, the lawsuit was filed by a group of scientists led by Senator Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the new COVID vaccine stated should be avoided at all costs. And he said, I urgently draw your attention to important issues related to the next vaccination against COVID-19. And he said, for the first time in history of vaccination, the so-called mRNA vaccines of the latest generation, directly interfere with the patient's genetic material and therefore alter the individual genetic material, which is genetic manipulation, which is already prohibited and was previously considered a crime. And he said the coronavirus vaccine is not a vaccine. No, it's a software program. And he asked, what has always been a vaccine? It was always the pathogen itself, which is a microbe or virus that was killed or attenuated, that is, weakened, and then introduced into the body in order to produce antibodies. Not even a coronavirus vaccine. And it is not that at all, I said. He said, it's part of the newest group of mRNA alleged vaccines. And once inside a human cell, the mRNA reprograms normal RNA DNA, which begins to make another protein. And that is nothing to do with traditional vaccines. Now, following the unprecedented mRNA vaccine, the vaccinated will no longer be able to treat the symptoms of the vaccine in any additional way. It's permanent. Vaccinated people will have to come to terms with the consequences because they can no longer be cured by simply removing toxins from the human body, as in a person with a genetic defect such as Down syndrome, Klinefelter syndrome, Turner syndrome, genetic heart failure, haemophilia, cystic fibrosis, or Rett syndrome, because the genetic defect is forever. And this clearly means if a symptom of vaccination develops after mRNA vaccination, neither I or any other therapist can help you, because damage caused by vaccination or this vaccination will be genetically irreversible. Now, the lawsuits against COVID vaccines, expected COVID vaccine mandates, and the CHD is working with a consortium of lawyers to prepare challenges to forthcoming institutional, city and state mandates for COVID vaccines. That was everything we stated in the summer of last year in the expose series, which, if you're new to the group, contains everything you need to know about what the COVID scam and pandemic is all about. Now, what has recently cropped up is the germ theory. And here's a look into how the germ theory all started and contains familiar patterns. And basically, the germ theory is rooted in the fraudulent but pharmaceutically lucrative work of Louis Pasteur. And most Americans will probably heard of Louis Pasteur, who was born 1822 and died in 1895, but it is doubtful that many are familiar with the name and the work of Antoine Bichamp. Now, the two 19th century researchers were scientific contemporaries, compatriots and fellow members of the French Academy of Science, but there were key differences in their views on biology and also disease pathology, which led to a prolonged rivalry within both and outside of the academy. Now, Bichamp was the more brilliant thinker, but Pasteur had political connections, including the Emperor Napoleon III. Oops. Now, Napoleon was connected to the House of Orange, as he later appointed his brother to be King of Holland, and both were connected via the House of Orange. Now, reportedly not above plagiarizing and distorting Bichamp's research, Pasteur achieved fame and fortune largely because his views were in tune with the science and the politics of his day. Meanwhile, mainstream medical historians relegated Bichamp's ideas, not as attractive to conventional thinkers, to the intellectual dustbin. Now, Pasteur's promotion of germ theory was a flawed notion that he did not so much discover as repackage, has remained dear to pharmaceutical company executive hearts up to the present day, having laid the groundwork for synthetic drugs, chemotherapy, radiation, surgical removal of body parts, and vaccines to become the medicines of choice. And the unshakable belief that there is one microbe for every illness is so ingrained as the controlling medical idea for the Western world that competing ideas about disease causation still have difficulty gaining traction. Why? Because they want the shekels, you see. They'll give you a pill for one disease, knowing it's going to create another one, and so then you have to take another pill, and on it goes. He was declared a national hero in France at age 55, and Pasteur discreetly told his family never to reveal his laboratory notebooks to anyone. And his family obeyed, and all his documents were held and inherited in secrecy. But finally, in 1964, Pasteur's grandson and the last surviving male descendant, Pasteur Valery Radeau, donated the papers to the French National Library. And yet the papers were restricted for historical studies until the death of Valery Radeau in 1971. The documents were given a catalogue number only in 1985, and in 1995, the centennial of the death of Louis Pasteur, a historian of science, Gerald Giessen, published an analysis of Pasteur's private notebooks in his Private Science of Louis Pasteur, and declared that Pasteur had given several misleading accounts and played deceptions in most important discoveries. Oops. Pasteur, a latter-day Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci all rolled into one, it seems. But the name Pasteur is very close to another leading French family, but less known, the Pasteur. Could well be one and the same. Now, the Pasteurs created the Western Union and later AT&T, and they also had close ties with the Rothschilds. Whilst everyone focuses on the jabs and their validity or not, there is an ongoing crisis globally at the moment, which is bound to get an awful lot worse. And a recent study reveals another devastating impact of this fake coronavirus pandemic has had on children around the world. And researchers at Boston's Children's Hospital estimate more than 1 million children may have been orphaned because of a COVID-19 related death. And according to their model that was published in The Lancet this week. Now, they defined orphaned as losing at least one parent. And the authors estimate at least 1.13 million children lost a parent or custodial grandparent. And of these, 1.04 million lost a mother, father or both. Now, overall, 1.56 million children were estimated to have experienced the death of at least one parent or custodial grandparent or other grandparents living with them. Now, the countries with the highest number of children who lost primary caregivers included the United States, South Africa, Peru, India, Brazil and Mexico. And they said, we know from our research that a loss of a parent or caregiver can upend children's lives and potentially affect their development if they are not in a stable home setting, according to the study author Chuck Nelson, who is a professor of pediatrics at Harvard and Boston Children's School. Now, they said, to calculate pandemic-associated orphanhood, researchers used excess mortality and COVID-19 mortality data from 21 countries that accounted for 77% of global COVID-19 deaths during 2021 and early 2020 and early 2021. But in the study, COVID-19 related deaths included deaths caused directly by COVID-19 as well as those caused indirectly by the pandemic through lockdowns, restrictions on gatherings and movement, decreased access or willingness to seek out or accept healthcare and chronic diseases. There's been a plethora of people who have died because the hospitals say they're full because of COVID when they're not, and people have not been receiving the adequate treatment. And they drew attention to something that is often underreported, and that is survivors who's left in the family. People don't often think about how families respond to events like this, and losing parents is like a secondary crisis on top of the initial crisis. This is according to David Abrahamson, who's a professor at New York University School of Public Health. But the study not only brings attention to the pandemic's long-lasting consequences for families, but also the future of their mental health, according to Dr. Nora Volkoff, who is the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. But yes, we the people know the devastation all too well when global elites, backed by rogue military, release bioweapons deliberately on the public, and the fear factor does the rest. This is a report out of the Department of Homeland Security. And following on from the Pentagon program, notifying that all whites, American whites, are inherently racist and evil, up pops another training video, this time the Department of Homeland Security. And a training operation explains the planning for situations requiring the isolation and quarantine of a large portion of a local rural population. Now, the Department of Homeland Security training program has provided a model for the federal government to normalize mass public quarantine measures, despite the fact that infections and deaths are dropping in the US. Not for much longer, it won't be. And a website by the Rural Domestic Preparedness Consortium, which is a training provider for the DHS, outlines in a program called MGT-433, Isolation and Quarantine for Rural Communities, and how to begin rounding up unvaccinated American citizens for mass quarantine centers. Now, this 8-hour video instructor-led course is designed to provide the knowledge necessary to begin planning for situations requiring isolation and quarantine of a large portion of a local rural population, according to the RDPC website. Now, this training will provide public and private sector emergency managers, community policymakers, public health and public safety personnel with the general knowledge necessary to begin planning for situations requiring the isolation and quarantine of the local and rural populations. Now, a rural community's ability to collectively respond to an emergency requiring isolation and quarantine, they say, is not only essential to minimizing the negative impacts to the community at risk, but also to minimize the long-term negative economic and health effects on the American public as a whole. Yeah, right. And it says this disturbing revelation comes as the Biden administration prepares to deploy door-to-door vaccine strike forces nationwide. Good luck with that. Which, according to the internal documents, will entail clearing buildings and flagging unvaccinated individuals for quarantine measures. Now, Health and Human Services Secretary also declared that the vaccination status of Americans is absolutely the government's business. No, it's not. And the question is, why, as Americans, are we paying these multiple agencies to write and prepare drivel like this? Why is it always against the people and never the criminals running the country from New York and Washington, D.C.? Why haven't these agencies called the ransomware hackers on utilities and other companies yet? And good people in the agencies need to stand up and speak out now more than ever, as your colleagues are utter psychopaths and anti-people, or maybe even anti-human. And the question is, why? Of course, this may well be another tactic to gently squeeze more numbers to take the techno-killing and harming jab. And it also has echoes of the Jade Helm fear-based program of around 8 years ago. And so the loop programs continue. But rest assured, should they be bold enough to try this or any similar program, I will warn you all now, it will turn into a bloodbath in this country. Make no mistake about it. So you policymakers best think again. But the object is, it will be less about the jabs and more about the guns. And yet again, people will be turning on each other based on lies coming out of the mind control TV box. A follow-up on last week's story that 45,000 people have allegedly died, it appears that is correct, from the COVID-19 vaccine within 3 days, according to a US whistleblower, which has sparked a lawsuit against the federal government. Thomas Renz, who's an attorney based in Ohio, has started a lawsuit against the federal government for covering up the true number of deaths from the vaccines, not the virus. And according to Renz, who is referred to as Jane Doe, who is an insider and has seen information on the vaccine adverse events reporting system, allegedly passed on the numbers and relevant information to him. And at an event hosted by Awaken America, he said, "We have someone who has sworn under penalty of perjury that there have been at least 45,000 deaths in just 3 days." Now, the whistleblower stated that there are around 11 different VAERS systems reporting adverse reactions and deaths across the US, and one system alone has allegedly reported the shocking 45,000 deaths from the vaccines. Now, Renz believes that this number is immensely higher, not lower, and is calling for immediate investigations into the VAERS system. How many have really died, and why are they covering it up? But for people who don't believe that they are covering it up, refer back to the earlier story of the White House correspondent Psaki, as she revealed they will and are covering up when statistics don't favour the corrupt system. Now, the attorney said that this information and lawsuit will not be reported by mainstream media, of course it won't, and will likely be censored by the big tech corporations like YouTube, Facebook and Go Ogle. And Renz said that these big tech giants are complicit in causing death, and he cannot wait to sue them over and over again. Now, through his Ohio-based law firm, Renz Law, he is suing the US Department of Health and Human Services to halt the COVID-19 vaccine rollout to children 15 years and younger. Now, the lawsuit filed by Renz and his legal team alongside America's frontline doctors against the emergency use authorization of the COVID-19 vaccines, which they state have had no long-term studies on the impacts on adults, much less children. Now, furthermore, the lawsuit challenges the legality of EUA, Emergency Use Authorization, as the law states that children must be at risk, which Renz argues that the CDC stated that children are statistically at 0% mortality rate by COVID-19. The CDC. But recent data from VAERS up to the week of July 2nd showed that 29.5% of all reported deaths in the US following the administration of the COVID-19 over the last 6 months and 2 weeks occurred in just the last week. 29.5% of all reported deaths. And the data showed that between December 14th, 2020 and July 2nd, 2021, a total of 438,441 adverse events were reported to VAERS, including 9,048 deaths compared to the previous week. This was an increase of 2,063 deaths, which we reported in the show 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, 2 weeks, man.
However, it is also known, this is where it gets a bit alarming. Those figures are bad enough, but it's also known that only 1% of adverse reactions are reported. As a report commissioned by the US Department of Health stated that adverse events from drugs and vaccines are common but underreported. Although 25% of ambulatory patients experience an adverse drug event, less than 0.3% of all adverse drug events and 1 to 13% of serious events are reported to the FDA. If you factor in that times 100, you're reaching extraordinary figures. Why 100? Because only 1% of the reactions are reported. And they said likewise, fewer than 1% of vaccine adverse events are reported. That's according to the Department of Health. Therefore, it's worth noting that the adverse reaction statistics are already inaccurate, as not every person who has an adverse event reports it to the relevant system. However, the question still remains as to the number of reactions and deaths, which may not be released to the public by the likes of VAERS and also the UK's yellow card reporting system. And that's the COVID over. Let's cover some other items. And we're going to Venezuela next. This is an interesting piece. Deep within the rainforests of Venezuela, there is a series of plateaus that sit more than 9,000 feet up above sea level and rise up 1,310 feet from the surrounding terrain like tabletops. And from above, they look like islands in the sky. And these are the Tepuis, a Pomon Indian word for mountain, and the most famous of which is called Mount Roraima, R-O-R-A-I-M-A. And the Tepuis are so unique in their geography that thousands of plant species exist nowhere else on the planet except on these plateaus. Now, in reality, all tabletop mountains, yes, you in South Africa, and the word mesa is linked to the very tall ancient trees that were cut down and then petrified into rock. But perhaps the word tepui, T-E-P-U-I, gives us a clue. It means the house of the gods. Now, the mystical mountains fascinated explorers and writers for centuries, and most notably Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who described an ascent of Mount Roraima in his 1912 novel The Lost World. Now, in Doyle's novel, a group of explorers found that dinosaurs and other extinct creatures were still alive and well on the remote plateaus. And some people today still believe that this is a real possibility. But when you have seen a pterodactyl flying, you know this to be true. And I spoke about this to the gathering last weekend. There are tens of thousands of islands around the world that only clown-based families have visited or mapped. And the public are absolutely oblivious as to what is or goes on there. Now, Japan, believe it or not, is the country with the most islands, a staggering 6,500 alone. And yet, how many of those islands are referenced? Now, once it was impenetrable to all but the Pomon indigenous people, Mount Roraima really was a lost world, and the mountain plateaus were already established when South America was linked with Africa to form the supercontinent Gondwana, which means, according to scientists, which is rubbish, they were first formed perhaps 400 to 250 million years ago. And during this time, molten rock forced its way up through the cracks into the sandstone landmass. At the same time, wind and water swept across Gondwana to erode the raised islands into the mountain ranges. No. And they said the region would come to look much like it does now, around 20 million years ago. In my opinion, that is scientific bullcrap of wind and erosion. But when the Pomon people describe a god called Makun Ema cut down the tree and caused a cataclysm of floods and fire, turning people and animals into stone, all very petrified forest, Arizona, that to me. And because the Tepuis have been isolated for so long atop their high, lonely plateaus, the flora and fauna of the Tepuis provide an organic illustration of the processes of evolution. And it is guessed that at least half of the estimated 10,000 plant species there are unique to Tepuis and surrounding lowlands, and new species were being discovered there as late as 1989. Now, although all of the Tepuis have been climbed, only a few have been extensively explored, and prior to the arrival of Europeans, the natives of Venezuela viewed the Tepuis as having special mythical significance. And according to the Pomon Indians, Mount Roraima is the stump of a mighty tree that once held all the fruits and tuberous vegetables in the world. However, it was felled by one of their ancestors and the tree crashed to the ground, unleashing a terrible flood. And they believed that if a person ascended to the top of the Tepui, he or she would not come back alive. Now, climbing the Tepui is exceedingly difficult and is made all the more so by the frequent rains that make the rocky footpaths slippery and also muddy. But the first European explorer to write about the Tepui was Sir Walter Raleigh in 1594. He was not British, he was French, just saying. And he wrote of a crystal mountain covered with diamonds and waterfalls, and said, "There falleth over a mighty river which toucheth no part of the side of the mountain, but falleth to the ground with a terrible noise and clamour, as if 1,000 great bells were knocking against one another. But what it hath I know not, neither durst he or any of his men ascend to the top of the said mountain, and those people adjoining being his enemies as they were, and the way to it so impassable." Now what he was describing was what is now called as Angel Falls, which was named after the mid-20th century American Jimmy Angel, who was the first person to fly over the area. And it's also said to be the world's tallest waterfall. Now, the Angel Falls were recently featured in Disney's Up, where the falls are referred to as Paradise Falls. But today's travellers may not stumble upon dinosaurs or other prehistoric creatures. They will be able to see black frogs and tarantulas that exist nowhere else on the planet. Or perhaps not. And it's believed there are many other species unique to Roraima that are yet to be discovered. As for the term Gondwana, which is said to be the continental shelf split from Americas and Africa, it is actually the name of a region in north central India. From the Sanskrit Gondavana, from Varna, forest, to Gonda, which is the Sanskrit name of the Dravidian people, said to mean literally fleshy navel or belly button. The Pomon Indians were the Kalima. Maya, or Mayan, is a word which is very familiar to the Western world, but very few know what it actually means. And it is a word which was used by the rishis, sages of ancient India, to describe the nature of this universe of changing forms. Now, the rishis have always been telling us that matter is not real or as solid as we think. And they say it's only an illusion projected by our senses, and they called it Maya, or the magical creative power of Brahman. But it's interesting that the tribes in America used the Indian name. Like the previous story, they were the Kalima peoples, hence the sacrifices of their own people and also others. We all live under the rain. I'm living under the rain at the moment and a fairly tardy lightning storm. Right. Three more pieces. And this piece was sent to me by one of the members. And is very revealing and confirms the shenanigans that goes on in this organization through fear, greed and intimidation, with a healthy dose of blackmail thrown in. And also why we need full control system group disclosure with full disclaimer, with the exception of interfering with children. And so this is the story. I recently had an encounter with a man I should call Jay, and it was immediately apparent to me that he worked with Langley, the CIA, in some capacity. And we began to talk about security clearances he had obtained while in service of the agency, and he was quite forthcoming with his story once we established our bona fides. For comparison, when I was issued my original top secret clearance, it covered normal everyday missions around the world. Later, when working with various agencies which required higher clearance and compartmentalization, I was required to get a TSSBI, Special Background Investigation Clearance, and compartments could be added to this. Other levels were based on the job I was doing at the time. For the example of the level of secrecy could be 1A1, which was the highest for someone flying a State Department mission, and these are the missions I most commonly flew, or 1B1 for the Presidential Airlift or Secret Service Airlift. Unfortunately, that also included Bill Clinton, Al Gore, the entity known as Anne, formerly known as Hillary, and other high-level dignitaries and military. And these missions were just a fraction of my overall experience, but I would like to point out that the United States military and intelligence agencies have had their hands in the pie of almost every country on the planet. I have been to most of them and couldn't believe some of the places we had bases or operations. If only I'd known how much more surprised I would be by what I learned after I got out. When I was issued my TS clearance, it covered normal everyday missions, and much of the above information I shared with Jay, along with old habits, I guess. But he identified himself as a contractor, working not only for the CIA, but NASA and also BlackRock, amongst others. I guess you could call him a tech guy. But given the nature of his job, he had to be trained in many non-tech things. Therefore, he had to have an appropriate security clearance, which he indicated was top secret Yankee White, with a full polygraph. And what that means is the quote-unquote national security clearance levels are confidential, secret and top secret, with sensitive compartmentalization information, SCI, being a further divider and special access programs limited further. If you think of the three levels as being floors of a building, your clearance lets the elevator go to a certain floor, but to access a hallway or a wing, you need the SCI category. Now, to access some of the rooms, you need the SAP, Special Access Programs key, and some rooms have their own elevators between floors. And elevators can only carry information up, never down, unless you want to get sent to the NSA jail. Now, Yankee White is not a national security clearance. It is a specific background check conducted on DOD employees, military and civilian, working under the White House's umbrella of operational control. And the Yankee White investigation and Yankee White clearance categories are completely distinct from the national security clearance levels, although based on similar investigative requirements and levels of risk. And Yankee White also has three category clearance levels. Level 1 is the highest, and many in that category will also be cleared for top secret SCI national security information. And examples of Category 1 include the Chief of Staff and Directors of the various military support activities of the White House. but given he was forced to do a full polygraph, I'm fairly confident that he had level 1 Yankee White. Level 2 includes most of the common, mundane, normal, everyday workers, and some of these will have top secret clearances, but some might only need secret. Now, examples include cooks, telephone operators, a Navy physical therapy tech assigned to Camp David, an Air Force public health tech who inspects the refrigerator on Air Force One for cleanliness. Quite a storm. And hail. And many DoD contract employees also fall into this category, and the guy who leads the flower beds at Camp David, who may or may not be justified for the security level clearance. Now, level 3 is for the ceremonial units, and examples are Honor Guard members and band members. I'm being absolutely hammered. I'm sure you can hear it all, because I can hardly hear myself. Let's have a short music break and we'll get back to it. What can we play? Let's play Food again. We all live under the rain. Oh dear, that was some downpour. Right, on we go. For as long as we survive and the power doesn't go out, I do not consent. Right, now yellow, where are we? Yankee White is for DoD employees only, and the Secret Service is not a part of the DoD. Therefore, the Secret Service does not have the Yankee White clearance. And now he understood the concept that no one ever knows the whole picture except for the guys at the top. I would like to inform them that they don't know the whole picture either. Sorry. And we talked about how the system was designed to protect the elites through plausible deniability. And this helped us establish a rapport based on what seemed to be a mutual disillusionment with the system. But it turns out that this tech guy was a communications expert in pretty much every discipline associated with it. But his forte was cellular networks. And his job was to accompany the teams on ops and tap lines. That's hook into people's phone lines. Extract information, whatever was in his purview. Now, given this fact, he was required to be trained in many of the same things the regular operators were trained in, and just in case things went to shit, he could extract himself and others as needed. Now, some of the training he was provided included defensive driving, firearms of all types, tactics, multi-climate survival, and various form of tradecraft. And his training sound is pretty interesting. And I assume it was from the farm. The farm is linked with the CIA. They have several farms where the animals go. And he said that he and his training partner were required to do many things together, and some of it really bothered him. In addition to the standard things you may have learned about in the movies, he was required to do things related to his speciality, and one such thing was to monitor several people's cell phones that were United States citizens and know everything about them and make a profile on them. And this was done in real time, the same as he would in the field. He knew it was illegal, but they tend to run roughshod over the rules, even in some parts of the training. And what they do with the cell phone information, you can leave it up to your own imagination. But another thing he was required to do in training was to care for a goat, and his partner would care for a sheep. Yes, you heard that correctly. Care for a goat, and his work partner would care for a sheep. And they did this for about a week, grooming, feeding and cleaning up after it and such. And the idea was that they would form an attachment to the animal. Then at the end of that week, they were told to slit the throats of the animals. They were told to put their hands inside the cut and feel around, and they were watching them closely for their reaction. He was sickened by what he had done, but he put on a happy face so he could continue through training. I'm sure you will all have some ideas as to why this is included in the course, and I will move on. After that, him and his partner were told to inject each other's neck with a syringe. This is getting rid of fears, aversions and phobias is one thing, but you have to wonder if there was something other than saline in those syringes. Later, he was injected with a chip for purposes of locating him in case he was ever held hostage or unable to be found. Does anyone else see this as a conditioning program or more? And to what end? I couldn't possibly remember everything he told me about his career, and I believe he's been with the agencies since his 20s, and he's now in his 40s and still works in the same capacity. But here are some random highlights. He's worked in 102 countries so far, and a good part of it was in embassies. He spent a lot of time at Mount Weather in the underground. Oops. Another base. Below the White House environs, he's been in many DUMs at different levels, including Dugway, which is now called Area 52. He sat in Saddam Hussein's office chair while in Baghdad doing his work. He claimed he had everything about Epstein Island and who all the players were and all the flight logs. The Hillary Huma Abedin video, as well as many others, was a surprise to him, but those things were kicked up to a higher level and swept under the rug. He was shocked that Hillary got away with her shenanigans regarding the classified emails. And he said that in order for any of those emails to be deleted or moved, you would have to get much higher approval as well as override codes to input. What I'll add to that is, that means it went way above the government, including the president. The president has a very low security clearance. He said even he couldn't access something like that. Let's just say that she is not well regarded in his circles, or she wasn't. He asked me about the go pills they use to give us for long missions. I never took them, but their use had increased over the years, and I believe there is a new variant that is out there. The original ones were pretty much methamphetamines, and he agreed there was a big problem with soldiers and contractors coming back addicted and they can't reintegrate into society. Now, one of his main principals is BlackRock. In fact, they are the preferred vendor of nefarious deeds nowadays, and they believe they have been for some time. He's heard of operations that ended up in genocide, and I happen to know he's right on that. Anything to get the mission accomplished with those guys. And he was struck by how many Mormons work for the CIA. Oops. His thought was that it was because they have fewer vices. Not quite. And he was unfamiliar with Citadel, Dragon Groups or color-coded programs, for example. But sounds like he was kept naive to the overview. But he did have a good sense of how Elites and Shadows are pulling the strings, but nothing about the control system above those levels or the scaly critters that were running things. Now, the member's thoughts is, my impression is that the money was so fantastic that he turned a blind eye to some things that otherwise would be a no-go. You know, I've spoken to one of these people, and they were contract for hire for killing people, and the CIA owed him $27 million for contract killing. They haven't paid as yet and probably won't. It's just staggering, the costs. By no means has he agreed with everything that happened, and he's been traumatized from it, and it has offended his version of morality. I believe he needed to unburden himself, otherwise he wouldn't have disclosed the things he did. And a critical component of teaching is listening. Sometimes you can talk to them through their prism of knowledge and they will arrive at the correct answers, or even better, the correct questions. That's your opening to introduce knowledge they might be ready for, but time marches on and shadows darken even the best of intentions. Truth in the personal sense cannot be adjudicated by another. The knowing of right and wrong is within all of us that aspire to a higher evolutionary development. We do not need a handbook. However, in attempting to part the clouds for others, we must be careful to not enter them and stay in overview. An insight to the greed, coercion, following wrong orders under threat and intimidation is all laid to bear by this piece. This is what goes on in the agencies. And I'm asking more of these people, and I keep saying in the show, come and speak to us. And give courage to other people who have worked for these utter psychopaths to turn the tide against them. I want you to listen very closely to the lyrics of this song, as it will preempt the next piece. I have a tale to tell. Sometimes it gets so hard to hide it well. I was not ready for the fall, too blind to see the writing on the wall. This will be probably the most testing piece covered in this show since I did the feminism piece a few years back. That pleasantly and surprisingly, I received no end of plaudits for. Despite being critical of women and their role, 95% of the feedback was from females supporting that piece. This will dredge up a range of emotions also. And if you think it is about you personally, do your own shadow and inner work. If you are triggered, you haven't done enough shadow and inner work. It is an opportunity to see where you, the individual, are and at in terms of developing the self. This speaks to and about the collective, not personal. If you take it personal, it says much about yourself, and no amount of projecting at me will correct that trigger. It is internal, not external. So, a bit of background to this. Many of the disputes in social media groups, including our own, and more so my previous group, involved 90% of females causing the issue. And even if we factor out the honeypots, agency puppets, it still leaves a predominant number that is causing the division between themselves and others in the group. So why is that? Well, as an observer and not immersed in things, I'm able to see more and connect the patterns of behaviour easier. And it reveals definitive patterns, two of which are the most common causes of female divisiveness. My observations led me to write this piece and also to provide the solutions to correct it and the inherent reasoning as to how and why this has unfolded as it goes back in time and is brought into the now, and the current version of female is a far cry from the archetype it represents. The main reasoning behind this inner war between females is they do not trust each other. That is the common streak running through many females within our own group and is replicated elsewhere. Females are a different breed when a conflict arises than males. Males will square up to each other and sometimes will fight each other or tell the other to go and F themselves or similar cussing, and by and large it ends either after the incident or the next day or week. If they were known to each other, and it generally follows, there is an excuse of sorry about that, I was off my head on alcohol or drugs, or I was just having a bad day. But, and it's a big but, this does not apply to the females' conflicts. It rages on and on and on. Neither will shut up, neither will back down, and it becomes a fight to the death scenario. The female becomes the predator, stalking its prey for a very long time, and they will just not let go of what was generally a nondescript event or comment. The deep-seated predator mode kicks in and pursues its victim with a relentless passion, often for years on end. And this is most common in families. The female siblings rarely get on. They often just tolerate each other or never speak to each other, as neither will back down or call a truce. That is predatory behaviours, and it's not befitting the archetype of the caring, nurturing, compassionate, birth-giving mother. Many females in our own group suffered after the departure of Kim, as she exhibited such poor behaviours and actions in the video and the follow-up chat on MeWe. But why was that the case? Well, females felt Kim was the answer, and finally a powerful female acting in a feminine but also partially male-dominant way. And all was well until she shifted into a total male-dominant aspect of herself. The females were looking and thinking the Eve would return the balance of the female psyche. And then the common theme amongst leading female roles, they adapt the worst aspects of the male-dominant role of aggression, domineering, unbalanced ego, and bullying. And this had a great psychological effect on the females in our group, and it still lingers on in some, as Kim was the great hope who then all let you all down. Some have taken on her current frequency, and that will not serve you well either, now or the future. And people must address that imbalance themselves. It is not anyone else's issue to deal with or fix. No one can fix somebody else. Only the person themselves. The same was felt in the UK when we had Margaret Thatcher as the first female Prime Minister. But she went male dominant and the disappointment was palpable. Look at the lead females, Merkel, Hillary Clinton when she was alive, Pelosi, Feinstein, Albrighton, Alexandra Cortez, Oprah, DeGeneres, all of them are not the traditional feminine aspect. All of them are male dominant. And the argument is that the female must do that to survive in a man's world. But the man's world is an illusion. 9 of the last 10 parents were females. Most of the covens were led by females. Most of the world's witches are females. Even Q mentioned similar to our show with the warning, watch out for the females of the male partners, suggesting it was the wives and not the husbands running the shows. Only in the Arab, Middle East and Asian regions are the females not playing the dominant hidden hand role. So how and why has this unfolded? Why do women not trust each other? Why are women so competitive with each other? Why are women so comparative with each other? Here is the underlying issue behind it all. And it goes back to the females mating with the gods and subsequently attempting to wipe out their fellow man here. Many will say they would never sleep with a Draco in that form. But they never presented themselves in that form. It was the chiseled, strong and strength-based Adonis or Greek god type that they looked like. But inside the facade or mask lay the hidden reptile. For those who have seen the original V or Stargate series will grasp that better. Most people are aware that we have a part reptilian aspect to our brainstem known as the reptilian cortex. Here is a description of it and let's see if it fits the pattern seen in most male dominant females. The term reptilian brain or reptilian complex is derived from a long-standing belief within the field of neuroanatomy that the forebrains of reptiles and other small animals were dominant by these structures. And Paul MacLean suggested that the triune brain model, that the basal ganglia and a number of the surrounding structures within the base of the forebrain are responsible for, quote, species typical behaviours, unquote, which are present in aggression, dominance, territoriality, and ritual displays. Species typical behaviours. Which species, you may ask? Aggression, dominance, territorial and ritual displays are all the traits of many of the Western and some Asian females today. Now a term that is often used for these type of females is a bitch. And bitch is a slang word for a person, usually a woman. And when applied to a woman or girl, it means someone who is belligerent, unreasonable, malicious, controlling, aggressive, or dominant. And it is described as being a female dog in heat. But female humans are not dogs. so why act like them? Now, I believe they used the term dog in a negative way as a means to denigrate the dog itself. Why? Because it is said the dog is man's best friend for a reason. And perhaps another type of animal wanted to create that distortion. Maybe there is a reason they call it being catty. So how did that come about? The mating of the gods and the females created a genetic alteration which was passed down from generation to generation via the mating. But the sexual union created much more and turned females into the more Draco male dominant aspect, not the human male dominant aspect. Is there evidence of this taking place, hidden in plain sight? Well, I've told you all, the Bible was their story, not ours. And it told you, let us make man in our image and likeness. Are you getting it now? The sexual union planted the seed, and the females were responsible for growing and developing it. And this is what we are seeing here and now, a female archetype very much removed from the original human archetype, and why so many females are acting the way they are. If you are a female who is competing with or against another female in the group or otherwise, do more shadow work. If you are comparative with other females, do more shadow work. You are not created to compete or be comparative with one another. That is the programming. And you have to break the programming down and replant your own seed of growth and compassion in a cooperative way, in your image, not theirs. You have to stop making excuses for your own poor choices and behaviours. Stop acting like predators, singling one another out. And learning to trust each other starts with you. Nobody else, just you. Quit pointing fingers away and point them back. You break the cycle, you break the programming, and what others do or don't is not your concern. Only what you do. And this applies to all females in this group. If you are currently saying now, what about the males? Do more shadow work. That is another deflection away from the self. This programming and demeanor is also destroying the male archetype as well. Gone is the protector warrior type male, and in came the too feminine aspect male due to female dominance and the imbalance of the archetypal roles. This has to be corrected on a wider scale, but we can start the process here and now. Otherwise, our village concept will eventually fall due to the women mistrusting each other, comparing and competitive with each other, and the division and disruption it causes. Some of the females in our group have begun to take on the challenge themselves. In the former Granny Napper group and the self-help group, which I addressed some of this on their call a week or so ago. There will be a joint revocation for all females presented in the self-help group and may be read out in a future show. And this is all about a change of mindset. To have the courage to break the patterns within yourself that no longer serve you. It never did. And this is the classic definition of thinking and acting different. Final piece tonight. In the Matrix series, it shows a load of Smiths and only one Neo. And the feeling is Neo is outnumbered. But Smiths are only a copy of a copy and ultimately a program. We are that program. And we are unhooking it. There is not just one Neo, as covered in the movie deliberately to make it look like a savior program. We all have the potential to be Neos, yet many on this planet are Smiths. Bot-like people copying behavior of the psychotic controllers has all the elements of AI. But AI can only copy. It is we who are the inputters of the knowledge. To the AI system, we are its God or source. It, in essence, is the great mirror of life. If you look in the mirror, which is absorbing, or look at the mirror, which is observing. It's only a reflection of us. It tells the story only of us, reflects back what we put out. So if that is the case, why aren't we all acting better? Because if we all act better, the AI interface that reacts negatively is created that way by the inputters into it. So the solution is we all become better people. All learn to have what you need, not what you greed. All learn to care and share. All learn to cooperate and not be competitive or comparative over others. Your only competition is within and is never to be compared to another organic soul. This planet of people are all mainly Smiths, and people can and will argue against that, as Smith is a bad guy, but too few admit to being the bad guy. Many people I've spoken to said they were Jesus, Mary, angelics, gods, and other perceived good guys in former lives. Yet never do we hear, I was Hitler, Pol Pot, Solomon, Herod, Ra, or other entities not of the light. Why is that? The bad guys all play a role in the Matrix and can be greatly beneficial to the light beings, should they learn the phrase, observe, not absorb. The trick in the movie was the sleight of hand move involves the pill, blue or red. Typically, people chose the better version presented, as you were mind-controlled into doing so. It is the binary choice which your subconscious creates, the choices of light and dark, good and evil, black or white. So if the red pill is bad, that means the blue pill is good, or vice versa. Wrong thinking. You didn't learn the lessons if you made your choice. You were corralled into making their choice, not yours. They chose the pills for you, and by Milgram experiment thinking, you were compelled to make their choice. Free will and sovereignty is you decided what are the best pills, and then you made your own choice. Whether that choice was right or wrong, you still made your own free will choice. So the right thinking on the blue or red pills was neither. They were not your choices to begin with. And the same applies to government parties. Picking the lesser of two evils is still evil. And again, they were not your choice, your candidates. It was their choices for you to select their candidates. And the people are presented with the matrix-led illusion that it is their choice by voting. Wrong. You were duped again. And they repeatedly create binary choices for the illusion of you deciding. The current is vaxxed or not vaxxed. You don't have to have their selections. The triality is, I am not sick, so I don't have to choose to be vaxxed or not vaxxed. And so that issue is none of my personal business. And the choice you make is also nobody else's business either. And by selecting the I am not sick and don't have to make a selection means you have observed the situation but not absorbed it. This has been the Truth, Honour and Integrity Show. My name's Thomas Williams. Bye for now.